I want you to put the word out there that we back up. Understand me? We back up.
Hey there. It's been a while since we last talked, it seems, but as Stringer Bill so eloquently noted in the cold open, we back up. So let's go. Welcome to Season 4 of the VSJ's Golf in the Commonwealth podcast, where we'll share stories relating to golf in our wonderful state. We'll start this season in a familiar place, the boardroom at VSJ headquarters in Midlothian. I'm Chris Lang, the VSJ's Manager of Media and Communications and the host of this podcast. We recorded this on Monday, March 25th, which is conveniently 1 week away from the start of another VSJ championship season. The 2024 season starts off in earnest on Monday, April 1st at the Dominion Club in Glen Allen with the sixth playing of the VSGA Multi-Format Team Championship. So what better time than now to gather two members of the VSGA Competitions Department to break down what's to come in what's setting up to be an exciting season of VSGA Championships and Events. You'll hear from Josh Coates, Director of Championships and Golf Operations, and Amanda Braun, Assistant Director of Championships and Golf Operations, as we break down some of the exciting changes in store for this year, including the new set of USGA exemption events, where winners of major VSGA championships will earn automatic entry into their respective USGA championships in 2024. We'll also talk a bit about working with the USGA in advance of the US Mid-Amateur in September at Kinloch and Independence Golf Clubs, the first time in more than a decade that a USGA championship has been contested in Virginia. Let's get right to it. Well, we're sitting here with Josh Coates and Amanda Braun from our competitions department to kind of talk about the lead into the 2024 VSGA tournament season. First of all, introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and how long you've been here and what you do here.
Thanks, Chris. Josh Coates. I'm the Director of Championships and Golf Operations with VSGA. I started as an intern in the summer of 2006, followed up with another internship in 2007, was hired full-time in 2008 in the championship department, and 16 long or short years goes by fast. Fast forward, here I am today. So happy to start another season, and I look forward to speaking a little bit more about it today.
Yeah, Amanda Braun. I'm Assistant Director of Championships and Golf Operations. I'm heading into my ninth season with the VSGA. I'm looking forward to another great season with the VSGA, primarily at women's events, but at a little bit of everything this year as well.
Well, one of the questions I wanted to ask you guys to tell the membership, what does the tournament department actually do in the off season? Because it seems like we don't see you for at least front and center for 5 or 6 months, but obviously a lot of things are going on in the background to try to make the next year run as smoothly as possible.
Yeah, actually, as soon as the last putt is holed, we all just go into hibernation in our respective tournament vehicles in the vans, and we don't resurface until March 1. They're ready to do another tournament season. No, but you know, there really isn't an off season. Yes, we're not traveling and running tournaments, but there are times where I feel as busy or busier in the quote off season as I do in the middle of July in the tournament season. There's just so much that goes on behind the scenes and planning. You know, there's a couple hundred events that we plan for each year that we're trying to iron out, exact schedules, staffing schedules, teaching seminars. We've got committee meetings, setting policies, board meetings, doing some fun stuff like simulator golf tournaments and things like that. So there's a lot of different things that happen in that period between, you know, November and March. But once we get into April, kind of our travel season, it's easy for us to get into a rhythm, traveling, running events. And that period goes by really fast too. But the off season is something that, you know, we look forward to in October. But as we get into it, we're just as busy, if not more so, than all these different things of, you know, trying to get ready for that next season and experiment with different policies that may come up, or teaching virtual rules seminars, not something that we do every single day. So it's just a lot of different that makes it go by pretty fast.
You know, one of the things I wanted to ask too is talking about securing sites, which is one of the things that's the big task in the off season. What goes into that? What kind of conversations do you have with clubs and club personnel? What makes for a good site for, say, you know, an elevated championship or a one-day event. I mean, there's obviously a whole lot of things going on.
Right. There certainly are a lot of things going on. The number one thing is that it's a good fit, and that's both ways. It's a good fit for us taking a certain tournament to a certain club or course, be it their desire to host it for a reason. Maybe they have a junior that's getting ready to graduate. They want to highlight that junior, so a junior championship is going to be front and center for them. Maybe the golf course length, does it lend itself to hosting a men's event? But the number one thing is fit and the desire to host on both sides, because at the end of the day, we want our players to feel comfortable at host facility, whether it be public, private, resort, club. Want to make sure that, you know, they feel welcome by us as BSJ staff also on their side. Also, there's a golf tournament to be played, obviously, so I want to make sure that the course setup and fit is good to identify that champion. But as far as planning goes, it starts, you know, today. You know, I'm always talking in our meetings that, you know, scheduling is kind of around the clock, around the calendar type of thing. We've already secured sites well into the future for tournaments like the Amateur Championship. There are several that we go to year to year, but, you know, we'll call a club and say, hey, we'd love to host an event as early as next year, but if next year doesn't work out, let's talk about the following year and years after that. So I've got into a pretty good rhythm with some clubs on hosting several events over the course of, you know, 5 or even 10 years, every other year, or the cadence that the club desires, in a mix of, you know, junior event, men's event, women's event, senior event, super senior, to try to give each one of our groups of players the same experience at a given club, because there are certainly clubs that people will star on their schedule and want to go to that club, be it they've heard about it, they've read about it, or it's a, you know, upper level private club that they just don't have the access other than at one of our events. So we want to give that experience to all of our players.
And to piggyback a little bit off of that, talking about some of those clubs, Riverbend, Cedar Point are good examples of that have come in and hosted junior events, women's events, men's events. I mean, how does that relationship work to try to get that package together?
With those, it's, with Riverbend specifically, it started at the Amateur Championship back in 2020. Things went really well there, and it was a conversation during the final match, talking with one of their committee members. He said, how do we, you know, start on the next series of events? I said, we could start right now. Kind of laid out the groundwork right there. That was pretty easy. Again, that goes back to the initial conversation of fit and desire to host. You know, they reached out to me in that time, you know, standing around, and, you know, I kind of took advantage of their willingness to do it and find the best fit, and, you know, setting up that cadence of events leading up to the Amateur Championship in 28. Cedar Point is another great club, great example of the staff there calling me or Amanda and saying, hey, what can we host? We want to add, you know, your events to our schedule and vice versa, and what can we do? Those calls are very welcome, and we really appreciate the support. But we do have to make some calls and try to get the club on the same page and find that good fit at other clubs around the state too.
And as we go into 2024, we've already talked a little bit about elevated events, and they have an official name now, USGA exemption events. The four major championships are amateur, women's amateur, junior stroke play, and junior girls championship. You know, how exciting is that to be able to present that golden ticket to somebody at the end of the day when they win that event, have it almost just be, it's almost like the NCAA conference tournaments where you get your chance, you punch your ticket, you get to go to the national without having to go through qualifying and all that.
It's pretty exciting for us. It only affects one player for that group or that tournament, but it's a huge deal. You know, we have four of those events starting this year, and hopefully that program grows and they continue to expand with those exemptions. But it's something that, at least on our side, it's easy for us to say as the Allied Golf Association to the USGA, saying our champions are worthy of going to that next step without going through qualifying to represent themselves and the VSGA on the national stage. So it's been conversations behind the scenes have been going on for years. All those are coming to fruition this year, starting with these four. And we're lucky and fortunate to have those events and to be able to market our events to our the very best players in Virginia, BSJ members that can come out and compete in these championships that are great in themselves. But if they are fortunate enough to hold the trophy at the end, now they get to go to the national level, and it's really exciting. And there's already a lot of buzz and talk about it, and we just look forward to where that whole program goes.
Yeah, I'm thinking about a couple years ago where Ross Funderburk wins the amateur, doesn't get through qualifying. I mean, Grayson Wood last year obviously managed to get through qualifying, but it's such a grind. I mean, 36 holes to, and obviously that whole qualifying structure is changing a little bit for the amateurs. Can we just talk about, first of all, the women's amateur, the qualifying is no longer in Virginia for this year. It's going to swap back and forth between here and Maryland. Is that correct,
Amanda? Correct. Yep. So a couple changes with USGA qualifiers. The U.S. Women's Amateur will alternate between Maryland and Virginia every other year. So Maryland's hosting that in 24. We'll get that back in 25. And it'll swap with the junior qualifiers. So we have the junior girls, U.S. girls junior, and the boys amateur this year, but that will go to Maryland next year, and that'll also swap back and forth. So instead of both of us trying to find site states and not competing with each other, that'll swap from year to year going forward.
And then with the U.S. amateur, we're moving into a qualifying model. It's kind of like the U.S. Open with a local going into a final.
That's correct. Yep. So our qualifier is going to be in July this year at the Golden Horseshoe Gold Course, but only 18 holes. So that's the first stage of qualifying, or local qualifying. And then those that advance will go to a sectional qualifier, not in Virginia for this year. Maybe we'll get one in the future, but it'll be the same model as the U.S. Open, to where you play 18 holes. There'll be more spots given at that qualifier than we're used to getting at the one and done qualifier. But then they'll have to go compete over 36 holes at the next level to get to the national championship. So hopefully, that model, it's great. It's going to get more people involved to the next stage to have that chance to play 36 holes to get to the national championship. But hopefully, our amateur championship will attract some of those elite level golfers to, one, they get to play in our amateur championship, hold our trophy, but also bypass that whole process and go right to the national championship, which is, I think, another reason why the USGA did what they did to try to add more clout to our events here on the local or the AGA level and attract more of those elite level players.
And let's talk about those elevated events now. The sites this year, the VSGA Amateur Championship is at Belhaven in Alexandria. I believe it's the second time they've hosted it. At least, well, certainly in the last, in this century. Have to go back through the entire record book to confirm that, but what's going to make Belhaven a really good site for that? I know that we've had our junior short play there recently, the U.S. Women's Open qualifiers there usually on a yearly basis. I mean, to take us through that site and what's going to make it exciting this year.
Yeah, last time we had that championship at Belhaven, we had a great final match. Brinson Paolini held the trophy at the end of that tournament. Of course, those in Virginia know Brinson well and his success in that tournament, and then on the professional stage as well. But Belhaven, just a great golf course. It's always in excellent condition. The facilities are first class. The staff is first class. It's just one of those clubs talked about earlier that when you're there as staff, as a player, you're a member for that week. And they treat you just like that. Welcome you to all their facilities, locker rooms, bars, grills, practice areas. You have the run of the place for that week, and that really goes a long way. The golf course will take care of itself. We know what that is, but just the ability for the members and staff to welcome us as members for that week goes a long way. We feel that, the players feel that, and we certainly expect nothing different this year, and we can't wait to be up there.
And they've got a really good vantage point in the 18th hole there for if a match is coming up tight. You've got that kind of amphitheater balcony sort of seating around the green. So encourage people to want to come out and watch high-level golf. It's a really fun time to be able to kind of see it in that setting there. So, and then the women's am, we talked about Riverbend. That's a really nice site for them. Just take us through, first of all, the differences between the women's and the men's am being there's flighting for further match play. And why do we do that? To have consolation flights or secondary flights?
Yeah, so the women's AM is a little bit different than the men's AM. So everyone will come out and qualify or try to qualify for the championship match. From there, if you don't make it in the top 16, we do flights of 8. And that's just to give ladies, girls, juniors, both men and or both women, and adults and juniors, the chance to play match play. I don't think there's a lot of match play events for junior girls specifically, so there's no way for them to really get that experience unless they come out and play. And that's one of the reasons why we went back to flighting and not just one championship flight. New this year will be a different set of tees for those other flights. So everyone will try to qualify on the championship yardage. And then if you don't make the championship yardage, it'll be a little bit less yardage for those other flights. Again, just to give them experience for match play. And I think it'll be a great addition to have that. It'll be my first time at Riverbend, so I'm excited to hear about it or see it in person. I heard great things from Josh Kent, who've been there for junior events and our men's amateur. So I've heard nothing but great things about the staff, the course. So it'll be fun and exciting to set that up for the women's amateur.
And that's another place with a great 18th hole vantage point there, right up against the clubhouse. And excuse me, you know, when we were there the last time, I believe it was the junior stroke play when Samir Davidoff beat Logan Riley in the playoff with a, I believe, an eagle on the second playoff hole. So that was kind of fun. And I think the membership that was gathered there really, really had a good time watching that. So it'll be really fun to be back there. Our junior stroke play is at the Federal Club here in Glen Allen this year. Some changes with the way that we qualify for the junior stroke play. Can you kind of take us through that, Amanda?
Yeah, so with the exemption with the USGA, we had to kind of look at our calendar and the dates and make sure that we fit in the window to be able to give that exemption to the junior stroke play champion. So it is earlier this year, July 8th through 10th, as opposed to later in July, which it's been in the past. And with that, we kind of had to make some changes and decisions on qualifying. We are moving to no individual junior stroke play qualifiers, but we've added a bunch of different ways to become exempt and to qualify for the event, including playing in a junior golf circuit event, one of our 36 holes, and placing in the top five for that. There's one actually in June at Twin Lakes that still has room. As well as we have in the past, if any juniors qualify for the VSJ Amateur or State Open, they will also be qualified for the junior stroke play, as well as having the top 20 junior boys from the junior golf circuit play, boys rankings come in. So we'll have 20 people off of those rankings as of June 24th. That will also get exempt. So there's a lot of different ways for juniors to be able to come into that event, even though they won't hold their own specific qualifiers.
Right, that makes sense. And then the junior girls, we moved it to 54 holes last year in hopes of getting the exemption into the U.S. Girls Junior, and that happened. How was that met last year with the reception of that, and then playing it at James River this year, another fantastic golf course that's hosted a lot of really great events for us?
Yeah, so the junior girls was actually kind of the wild card in getting the exemption. Not to get into the specifics, but it has to do with our Wagger power ranking. Those listening here probably are familiar with Wagger rankings. That's been a huge point of emphasis among the elite players, especially over the last 5 years or so. So we weren't sure if that championship was going to meet the threshold. We changed that format to a 54-hole event to have it ranked within the Wagger rankings. And fortunately, we met our threshold and we were able to offer that exemption for this year. So exciting to be able to do that. There still are a couple different levels in which the girls can participate on the championship level. Obviously, playing from a yardage that's appropriate to define the winner for that week over 54 holes. However, for those that aren't quite ready to play from that yardage or that level of competition, we do have an offering to play a shorter yardage over 36 holes in order for those juniors to get a little taste of being at a VSJ championship or a championship in general, and also kind of something to work towards as well, being that they may graduate, so to speak, to the championship level.
Yeah. Well, it'll be exciting to watch this year to see what happens down there at James River. The state opens, which we run with the in conjunction with the Middle Atlantic PGA section, three of them again this year with the state open, the women's open of Virginia, and the senior open of Virginia. I want to start with the women's open of Virginia, though. That was such a really successful event last year. I think it exceeded everybody's expectations for what a first year event was going to look like. Why did that go so well, Amanda?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool to have 80 players come out and play in the first ever Women's Open of Virginia, held at Independence. I think we it just proves how well we marketed it and how well the word of mouth from our players and supporters did with getting players. We had 17 professionals come out and play, as well as 10 different states represented, those kind of neighboring Virginia with West Virginia, Maryland, North Carolina, but we also had players from New Hampshire and Georgia, and our champion actually came from California. So it was really cool to have it be a true open. So we have options for both VSGA members as well as out-of-state players to come and play. Hoping to have a full field of 72 this year, so it will be capped at 72, even though we had 80 last year. And there's different credentials on how that field will be determined. That's available on the event website. But it was the highest Women's Open power ranking last year in the Southeast. So something that I think we were shocked to see, but pleasantly surprised to have that, and something we can use for marketing going forward. So just trying to find those college players and top players, both pros and ams, to come and play in our event to help make it the highest Women's Open in Virginia.
There aren't a ton of Women's Opens across the country, are there, really? For did you guys have a chance to do some research on other associations and what they did when they were starting a Women's Open championship versus an amateur championship?
A little bit. Like you said, there aren't that many Women's Opens. Some of the more successful Women's Opens are in like California, Florida, those states where there's just tons of golfers, both amateur and professional, so it's not exactly fair to compare it apples to apples. Honestly, we just sat back with our committee and just said, what would make a great Women's Open championship? And using others as a loose guideline, but we made it very much our own. And we're proud of that. Like you said, it was a huge success. We would have been happy with 40 players at last year's event. To have over 80 register and compete, I think the youngest player was 11. The oldest player was over 70. They happened to be paired together for at least one round. So that was a cool photo for the first year. But we just really can't wait for this year to look forward to what this tournament's going to become.
And then we go to the State Open of Virginia back at Independence for the fourth straight year, I believe, or fifth, I can't remember at this point. All blends together. But what kind of changes are we going to see this year to the State Open? And it continues to be a 54-hole stroke play event where we had a professional, Connor Burgess, win last year, former VSGA Junior Boys Golfer of the Year at one point, played at Virginia Tech. So it's good to see him have some success. But any changes upcoming this year?
I wouldn't say it's fair to expect any huge changes as of right now. It's been going really well at Independence. So we don't try to make change just to say we did it. If something's working, we stick with it. Of course, the golf course setup, there may be different changes made lengthwise or hole location wise just to, spice things up a little bit for those that play year in and year out, just to give them different looks. But I wouldn't say to expect any huge changes right now. It's been a great event. Independence is a great host, and we always get a great field, and look forward to seeing who holds that trophy at the end, because we've had some winners that we might expect to win, some that we don't, so you just never know.
For sure. And then the Senior Open this year is moving off of Independence just because of the U.S. Mid-Amateur or the Stroke Play Qualifying being there. Willow Oaks is decided to host it this year. What kind of expectations do you have of moving that just across town to Willow Oaks?
I know some players are really excited to go to Willow Oaks. We had the Senior Am last year. They did a great job hosting that event. But we had originally planned for the Senior Open to be at Independence just a couple of weeks before the U.S. Mid-Amateur Championship, which I know we're going to talk about here in a few minutes, but that sounded like a great idea 2 years ago. And then I think both parties, us and Independence, got together and said, hey, wait, what are we doing here? It's not every day that or every year that a national championship comes to town. So let's move this event over to Willow Oaks, and you all focus just on the U.S. Mid-Am. That should be your primary focus. And we all agreed that that was the best move. And really just took one phone call over to Willow Oaks, and they were gladly accepting to host it, and we'll see in future years what it all comes about.
Should be noted that Willow Oaks also has hosted state opens in the past, so they're no stranger to hosting big events, which is it's a wonderful golf course. And I struggled on it during the staff championship, but not everybody's going to hit 11 balls in the penalty area like I did, but we're different penalty areas. Before we move on to the U.S. Mid-Am and some of the other stuff happening in Virginia, the kind of our team matches this year, we get both of them at home, the women's Virginia's Carolinas and the captain's putter. The women's Virginia's Carolinas is a little bit different than the captain's putter. It's more almost like a straight Ryder Cup type of format, but there's some differences with the women's. And I know it's gone down in days the last couple of years, correct?
Yep. So the Women's Virginia's Carolinas had some changes last year. We have 18 players from Virginia, West Virginia, competing against 18 players from North Carolina and South Carolina. It used to be 24. And we also made a change to the number of days. So instead of a three-day event, we bumped it to a two-day event. So the first day is nine holes of four ball and nine holes of modified alternate shot, and then straight singles the second day. So similar with keeping the same three formats with modified alternate shot and four ball. But instead of having three full days plus a practice round, we've limited it to two full days plus a practice round. So from what I heard last year, the players enjoyed that. It worked out really well, and looking forward to being on home turf in Keswick, another great course that supports us in a lot of different ways. It'll be a good challenge for, I think, both teams, and it'll hopefully Virginia can come out on top.
Yeah. I know there's a little bit of difference in the scoring there. We're still doing the front nine, back nine total for that. That's a little bit different
correct.
Than the captain's
part. So the women's are three-point matches, so there's a point for the front nine, 1 point for the back nine, and then an overall match point as well. So just to make it a little bit closer, and everyone has a chance to play both has a chance to still win after the first day.
Yeah. And then in October, we'll be down at Bayville Golf Club in Virginia Beach for the Captain's Putter matches. I know it was a tough draw last year down in North Carolina, but I'm sure the guys will be eager to get back after it. I mean, what were your impressions of last year and your excitement level for going to Bayville this year?
Yeah, these matches are both the women's matches, the Captain's Putter. We have some junior matches that are the same format. You know, these are our Ryder Cup matches. They're the Curtis Cup matches, the Solheim Cup, which is also hosted here in Virginia this year. Those are the ones that get televised, and I think most golf fans know about those events. But everyone should think of these events just like those. For these players, they work all year to get to these matches. It means a great deal to them to represent their state or their association to come together and compete against, whether it be the Carolinas. We have some matches coming up against West Virginia in April. The juniors follow a similar format, but it's a big deal. It's a big deal to these players and the staff to put on a good event to, you know, test the best golfers in the region. But yeah, specifically about the Captain's Putter going down to Bayville again, I look forward to that. It all started a couple years ago. I was walking through the clubhouse, and on their wall they have a framed newspaper article about how Bayville welcomed the then called Virginia's Carolinas matches when they opened, and walking through, and I said, hey, that has a good ring to it to host in 2024, because if you don't know, the golf course was renovated and reopened here recently to be able to have a similar story like that, and it just kind of went off from there. But they'll do a great job. Renovated golf course, it'll be a challenging test for the players. There's a lot of flexibility in match play in general, but certainly on that golf course and some of the things they've done there. Look forward to setting it up for the first time since they've renovated and reopened, and it'll be a great event.
Yeah, I think I remember the green complexes underwent a whole lot of renovation. That was really one of the biggest things there. So I'm excited to see it as well, because I rode through and took some photos when they were still doing the renovations. It wasn't quite complete yet, but it looked like it was going to be awesome. So it'll be really fun to be back down there. Let's move on to the U.S. Mid-Amateur Championship, which is our first championship here, USGA Championship in Virginia since, 2013? One of the last Public Slings Championships up at Laurel Hill. What kind of involvement will the VSGA have behind the scenes with this championship at Kinlock and Independence?
So just a few years ago, the USGA came up with a new initiative to involve the AGA staff, so the VSGA in this case, with some of their events, at bringing some of our staff members onto their staff for that week to go behind the scenes, doing course setup, picking hole locations, serving on the rules committee, doing honestly a lot of the same things that we do all season long, but doing it at a national championship, which is a great privilege to be able to do that. So this year, Kent Hollabar Another assistant director and I will be on site at Kinloch and Independence as an extension of the USGA staff. We're actually on their staff for at least a week, probably more like 10 days or so, because the golf course setup week, it starts on Monday. Tournament will start on Saturday and go through the following week into match play. So we'll be on their team for an extended period of time, like I said, which is just a good change of pace for us. It's not every day that the national championships come to Virginia, like I said earlier. So to be able to have that hands-on involvement is a huge honor. And then they also invite some staff to serve on the rules committee. So Amanda will actually be on the rules committee for at least stroke play, but probably into match play as well, which is a little bit different capacity in which she'll serve, being just solely on the rules committee, but helping with pace of play, rulings, just like, you know, you might see on TV on the PGA Tour. She'll be in there giving all the tough rulings.
And you've had that experience. You worked the U.S. Girls Junior a few years back as referee, correct?
I did. I was on, like Josh and Ken are this year, I was on kind of the USGA staff, so got to see both sides of walking with Tracy Parsons from the USGA, helping set up the course each morning, and then kind of getting into a cart and help rover and do timings and kind of seeing the rule side of it. Gave some rulings while I was there. So it'll be exciting for me to kind of just be a rules official and be on the committee and kind of see that side of it, and not necessarily both the administration as well as the rules part.
Yeah. And speaking of rules officials assignments as well, you've got one coming up in the next week or so at a pretty prestigious place. Tell us a little bit about it.
So for the second time, I've been invited to be a rules official down at the Augusta National Women's Amateur Championship. So I'll be down there starting on Monday and then serving as a rules official both at Champions Retreat on Wednesday, Thursday, and then at Augusta National on Saturday. So pretty excited to go back a second year. It was a great experience last year, kind of too good to be true. And so it'll be exciting to go back and kind of and redo it, and I'm looking forward to that event as well.
You know, we always see the Masters on TV and everything. What was the reception to that event down there from the people at Augusta to have the ladies around there and playing that course?
Yeah, it was awesome. If you've ever been to Augusta National, just everyone says it's like a sacred grounds, and it truly is. From the moment you step on foot on the property, it's just kind of everyone's in awe and jaws drop. It's really cool that they let the whole entire field play in the practice round. So even though it's the final round is played there, it's the top 30 in ties, they do let the whole entire field go out and have a practice round there. So everyone at least gets to see the course, walk the course, and play it if you're a player. So it's awesome. I'm looking forward to being back and helping out again.
Yeah, we're honored to have you down there for sure. So. It just the future of USGA events in Virginia now, all of a sudden we've got a bunch of them coming up that are seemingly, well, maybe not a bunch, it's two more, but the senior women's AM is at the Homestead in 2025, is that correct?
That's correct.
And then the men's senior amateur will be in 2029.
Correct, yep.
Just what is it kind of just raising the profile of golf in Virginia to be able to have these players come and to have our players get a chance to play courses that they know pretty well in a national championship type of setting?
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, the mid-AM that we talked about at Kinloch and Independence, that was scheduled for 2020. Of course, we know what happened that year and events being canceled and postponed. That was one of them. So that was pushed to 2024. Since before that, like you mentioned, it does go all the way back to 2013 since the USGA Championship or National Championship was here in Virginia. So we're really excited to be able to showcase Virginia, our great clubs that are serving as hosts to be involved at some level. It's like I said, it's a good change of pace. It's a good experience for our players to be able to compete in qualifiers in Virginia, because usually we add a qualifier or get to host a qualifier that maybe we wouldn't. So, and they get to play the qualifying rounds on their home turf, usually for more spots because of the enthusiasm. So. We'll host two mid-AM qualifiers this year. Hopefully we'll max out those spots. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, this year in 24 with the U.S. Men's mid-AM, then in 25 the senior women, and 29 with the senior men at the Homestead.
You know, just kind of close out. What quick question. What were you most excited about for this 2024 season upcoming?
I would say at this point it's, you know, the ebbs and flows of our year mentioned in the intro of just getting back out on the golf course. You know, we've Our last event, championship event, was in October. Of course, we have junior events, one-day events that last into November, and we do, you know, have a small celebration when that last event is held. But you know, it's looking forward to getting back out, working with host club staff, just being outside, being on the golf course, which is why we do what we do. So, you know, and all that being said, you know, we talked a lot about what we do and some of the cool things and clubs, but at the end of the day, you know, we're a membership organization. The players are our members. We do all this for them. It's not for us. We have meetings and we set policies to make our events the very best, but it's really not for us. It's about the players. So getting to see them and getting to have them participate in the event, getting their feedback, hopefully positive, but always, you know, willing to listen and want to listen to the constructive feedback and getting better. So it's just putting all that into practice and seeing that come together for another year.
Yeah, I'm excited to go to a couple of new places. I know being on staff for 9 years, you would have think I'd seen a lot of golf courses in Virginia, and I have. But Riverbend being on the list, Belmont Country Club, who's hosting our women's state team matches, I've never actually seen that course. And as I've seen Cavalier, but never actually ran an event at Cavalier, they'll be hosting our women's stroke play championships, which involves mid-am, senior, super senior, as well as a net championship for women as well. So I'm excited to get back out and start marking courses and setting up and running championships, but also excited to see a couple new places that I haven't been to before.
Tend to agree with you guys. We get to November, we're kind of ready to get back in the office for a little bit, but I got to tell you, I'm jonesing to be back out on the golf course, talking to players and seeing some good golf this year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both for your time today, and we're looking forward to seeing you out on the golf course this season.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks again to Josh and Amanda for taking our members inside what goes into contesting a VSGA event. 5 full-time competition staffers, along with several interns, are tasked all summer long with keeping things running smoothly, not only with qualifiers and championships, but with VSGA one-day events, various high school and college championships, and much more. Looking to get in the game? Check out the new look, VSGA.org. Check out the season schedule, learn about the one-day program, or register an event. We can't wait to see you out there on the golf course. Look for more Season 4 content on Golf in the Commonwealth throughout the spring and summer. Give us a like or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. That'll do it for this episode. Thanks for listening, thanks for understanding, and until next time, so long.